Charles Swindoll, he wrote about a woman who said that she wanted to end up marrying 4 different men in her lifetime. He said, first, she wanted to marry a banker, second, a movie star, next, a clergyman, and finally, a funeral director. When asked why, she answered, 1 for the money, 2 for the show, 3 to get ready, and 4 to go. Now, that's just being silly. But as you know, over the past 50 years, our society has greatly diminished the value of marriage, commitment, and the home. We find things like the amount of people who are cohabiting without marriage, the divorce rate, the amount of children being raised in a fatherless home, and so forth. And so today, we're going to be looking at an interesting love story, if you want to call it that, and it ends in a happily ever after. And it certainly shows the value in things like marriage, commitment, and the home. And so if you haven't already, let's be turning back to the book of Ruth. Today, we are going to finish our mini-series on this little book. Before we begin, we need to get some background, get everyone back up to speed. Now, as I mentioned last time, the Feast of Harvest, also known as the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost. Well, at that occasion, the Jews would read the book of Ruth. And this seems to have been done because much of the story is set in the harvest fields. This book, it is a Hebrew short story named after its main character, Ruth, a woman from Moab who became the great-grandmother of King David. And it's considered by many to just be one of the most beautiful short stories ever written. There are no laws, there are no miracles, no wars, no fistfights. I mean, it's just the domestic affairs of one particular family. In this book, it shows an old widow's transformation from despair and emptiness to happiness and fulfillment through the acts of her daughter-in-law, Ruth. The name Ruth, it sounds like the Hebrew word for friendship. And she certainly proved to be a great friend to her mother-in-law, Naomi. Well, as the book tells us, these things happened in the time of the judges, which came before the period of the kings. And this, it was a period of religious and moral decline, national disunity, foreign oppression, just immorality and idolatry and wars, both internal and external. Well, they're rampant, they're common. As Judges 21:25, it says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And that's why it's sometimes said that Ruth brightened the dark ages of Israel's history. The story is like a breath of fresh air in the midst of all that. We can see that redemption, an important word in Ruth, it means to buy back. And although it's not always translated as that, the Hebrew word is found, I believe, 23 times in this little book in its various forms. And while the book, it doesn't record the purpose for writing it, I definitely believe that it illustrates some valuable truths, even for Christians, even for 21st century American Christians living in Missouri, sitting in a church building in Rolla, listening to a skinny white preacher. It's for us. Now, chapter 1, read about the family of Elimelech. And some people like to point out that this family, well, it had problems from 3 areas. Problems from cultural sources, living during the time of the judges. Problems from natural forces, the famine and having sickly children. And problems from personal choices, moving out of the promised land. And of course, our difficulties in life, well, they often stem from these as well. You may ask, how do we know that they had sickly children? Well, we get that from the names that they gave to their sons. Mahlon means sickly, and Chilion means pining or wasting away. And so maybe that had something to do with their untimely deaths. Now, again, I'm so glad that we don't name our kids like that today. My name would have been Skinny Legs or something like that. In the end of chapter 1, we saw that Naomi and Ruth, they settled in Bethlehem. And Naomi, well, she's an old widow who's lost not only her husband, but her 2 sons. She's telling people to call her Mara, which means bitter, instead of Naomi, which means pleasant or lovely. And Ruth, well, she's a young widow, And she's a Moabitess now living in a strange land. You see, unlike Orpah, she decided to go with her mother-in-law. And in this chapter, we really are reminded of the importance of the choices that we make in life and the impact that it can have on our lives. So we saw Elimelech's choice to move his family out of the promised land, and then we saw Ruth's choice to move with her mother-in-law to Bethlehem. And sometimes, like I said last week, the choices that we make, they're not necessarily between right and wrong. Sometimes just between good and better. We just need to be careful, and we need to make sure to make our choices with Matthew 6:33 in mind. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. Well, in chapter 2, we saw just two really good examples of righteous character. We saw Ruth's humility and her willingness to do whatever it took to take care of her mother-in-law. And we saw Boaz's respectful treatment of his workers and then his kindness toward Ruth, this poor foreign woman in his field. Also in chapter 2, we were introduced to the concept of a kinsman redeemer. See, a kinsman redeemer would protect the interests of the needy members of the extended family. They would do things like redeem land that a poor relative had sold outside of the family, which was a big deal to them. They would redeem a relative that had been sold into slavery. They would avenge the killing of a relative. And they would marry a childless widow to raise up children in her dead husband's name. Now, with that in mind, let's just go ahead and we'll move on to the next chapter. So chapter 3, Ruth appeals to Boaz. Let's start with verses 1 through 6. Now again, I'll be reading from the NIV. I think it does a good job with the book of Ruth. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you, where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Well, perhaps Naomi, I don't know, maybe she interpreted his kindness as interest in Ruth. And maybe she had heard something in Ruth's voice when talking about him. But some people, you know, they wouldn't be too happy with their mother-in-law trying to, I think, arrange a marriage for them. But Ruth, again, she listened to her advice. So she did some exfoliating, she fixed her hair, she went from one eyebrow to two. You know, maybe she had time to get a manicure and some microblading done. In other words, they got Extreme Makeover Israelite Edition. You know, it's an ancient version of Hair Creations by Kim, something like that. Well, a threshing floor. Okay, it was often a circle of rock or hard-packed ground, about 50 to 100 feet across. And that's where the grain would be threshed and winnowed to separate it from the chaff. And I assume he'd be sleeping by the grain that night in order to protect it from thieves. And to our single ladies, okay, Boaz, he had two really good qualities that you should be looking for in a guy. He loves the Lord, and he's got a job. Now, there are other things to consider, but those two ought to be at the top, okay? He loves the Lord, and he's got a job. Now, this may be a funny cultural thing to us, what she was asking Ruth to do. But every culture has got its odd practices. I mean, just ask Kwame and Mehta. I mean, there are plenty of things that we do that causes other cultures just to scratch their heads. And no, I don't believe anything indecent or immoral was involved in this one. At least it wasn't between Ruth and Boaz. See, I know some of you were raising your eyebrows or your microblades. Okay, verses 7 through 15. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. So the kids would say she got mad ninja skills. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. And he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I'm your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character." Now that's the same, that's the same language used for the Proverbs 31 woman. "Although it is true that I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as sure as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning. And so no immorality went on. But got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out." When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back to town. Now some manuscripts say, then she went back to town. Okay, the statement, "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer," it seems to be a request for marriage. I think it symbolized protection and security. And we find it mentioned in Ezekiel 16, verse 8. And I've read that even modern Jews will sometimes incorporate this into their wedding ceremonies, where the groom will put a cloak around his bride to kind of symbolize this. So what did he mean by "this kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier"? Well, her first kindness, that was to stay with Naomi to take care of her. Well, this kindness, this was her willingness to marry Boaz. See, she chose Boaz over a younger man so she could provide Naomi with a legal heir for one of her deceased sons. And Boaz, I don't know, he seemed pretty happy about this as well. I mean, at least that's the impression that I get. And notice here that he mentioned her noble character, not that she had great hair, nails, and eyebrows. Now, it's nice to look good on the outside, but it's more important to look good on the inside. Well, as we can see, though, the priority, well, it went to the nearest relative, Boaz. Okay, he's not going to bypass the directives of the law. Also, I like how he wanted to protect her. You know, protect her from gossip. He said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." We can see from Hosea 9:1 that prostitutes would sometimes, they would try to take their business to threshing floors, at least in Hosea's time. But see, that's not what happened here, and Boaz, he didn't want anyone thinking that. Okay, verses 16 through 18. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled." So that present he gave, the 6 measures of barley, that assured Naomi that he was really willing to do it. So there was nothing for Ruth to do. But now the hard part, wait. So in this chapter, we see the integrity of Boaz, wanting to keep the law, as well as his thoughtfulness, trying to protect her from gossip, and his generous gift. It's 2 more really good qualities. All right, chapter 4, Ruth marries Boaz, verses 1 through 6. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along, Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here." And they did so. Then he said to the kinsman redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line." "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. At this, the kinsman redeemer said, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself, I cannot do it. Well, we can see that the town gate, it kind of served as a town hall in ancient Israel. See, it's the normal place for business and legal transactions since, you know, witnesses are readily available, people going in and out. And 10 elders, I assume that was the customary full court for legal proceedings during this time. Well, I've read that it could be translated that the land had already been sold. In her destitute state, maybe she had already sold it, or she was ready to sell it. Some people, though, they think that maybe, it might already have been sold by her and Elimelech before they left for Moab. See, as I mentioned, one of the jobs of the kinsman redeemer was to redeem land that a poor relative had sold outside of the family or was going to sell. Very important to the Israelites for land to stay within the family. Now, what he meant by I cannot redeem it, it might endanger my own estate, that's hard to determine. But he liked the idea until he learned that it involved the responsibility of marrying and supporting Ruth as well. You see, the kinsman redeemer, here's the thing, must not only be a relative, but must also be willing. Now, personally, I think Boaz was pretty savvy in the way that he presented this. You know he wanted Ruth for his wife. I mean, a young bride with a good work ethic, a kind spirit, and a foreign accent. Sounds just like my wife when we first met. Yes, sir. All right, verses 7 through 12. In earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, buy it yourself. And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today you are witnesses. Then the elders and all those at the gate said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Now, the giving of the sandal, that might have represented the right of the receiver to walk on and till the land that had been redeemed. And with the explanation here, it had obviously gone out of use by this time of writing the book. The reader needed an explanation. And yes, it was okay for Boaz to marry her, a Gentile, since she had fully embraced the true religion. Now, for our teens, and for those of you who are not married, I gotta say it. Nationality or color doesn't matter. The amount of melanin in their skin, the slant of their eyes, the accent on their tongue is nothing. What matters is their relationship with God. And so my suggestion is that you only date strong Christians because you marry whom you date, or court, if you don't like the D word. You'll notice here, they mention Rachel and Leah, the family of Perez. Now, Rachel and Leah, those are the wives of Jacob. You know, the tribes of Israel came from Jacob's children. And the family of Perez, his descendants, well, they had raised the tribe of Judah to a prominent place in Israel. Well, let's go on, verses 13 through 22. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. for your daughter-in-law who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth. Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. The women living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon, Nahshon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, Boaz the father of Obed, Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David. Now again, that's an Americanized pronunciation of those names. Notice, okay, verse 13. The Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Children need to be seen as a gift from God. And since that's true, there's a stewardship involved. How are we raising them? So Naomi, she got to have an heir. Obed, it means the serving one. And he'd serve Naomi by continuing the family name, and grandchildren just seem to make people happy in general. So again, look, this book shows her transformation from despair and emptiness to happiness and fulfillment through the acts of Ruth. As I said to Naomi, Ruth proved to be better to her than seven sons. And here we find the genealogy of David that just so happens to be the genealogy of the Messiah, who would be laid in that manger about 1,000 years after the time of David. And so Ruth, a young widow from a heathen land, she not only found a place among the people of God, she also found a place in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. I think there's something that we can get from this. Your future is much more important than your past. You see, an undesirable background, that doesn't mean that we can't have a wonderful and a fruitful future. And so much of it depends on the choices we make. Well, this book is just filled with contrasts. Ruth, Orpah, Boaz, and the unnamed kinsman. Naomi at the beginning, and Naomi at the end. You know, Mara back to Naomi. So what can we learn from this book, this book of David's righteous ancestors? Well, it shows that God accepts people from all nations. The Messiah descended from at least three Gentile mothers, Tamar, Rahab, and Ruth. Everyone, regardless of their nationality, who puts their faith and obedience of God will be acceptable to him. It shows us the importance of virtues like loyalty, kindness, humility, and integrity. I think it shows us the truth of Romans 8:28. We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And it illustrates the functions of the Hebrew kinsman redeemer that seems to be a type, a symbol of our redeemer, of Christ. Now again, the New Testament talks a lot about redemption. We find verses like Galatians 4:4-5. But when the fullness of the time came, God sent forth his son, born of a woman born under the law, in order that he might redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. And Titus 2:13-14. Looking for the blessed hope and the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior, Christ Jesus, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself a people for his own possession, zealous for good deeds. Ruth's a good book. Let's remember that such character, like that of Ruth and Boaz, it was manifested during this time, this dark period of Israel's history. As I mentioned last week, there are some people who believe that we are coming on a dark period of America's history. Now, I hope that's not true, but if it is, will you and I still be that salt of the earth and that light of the world, no matter what? Matthew 5:13-16. So, my conclusion, we need more Ruths in the world.